Hello again, everyone, and welcome to another edition of KHOI Community Radio's Capital Week, your listening post for politics, Iowa style, where we explore and analyze who's been making news in and around the state capital, what that news is, and what it all means. We're glad you're with us. I'm Dennis Hart, joined as always by my partner in politics, Laura Bellin of the blog site Bleeding Heartland. Laura, here we go again, this time on Halloween night, just 1 week before the general election. Welcome.
Good to be here, Dennis.
Laura, we have plenty to talk about because there was plenty of campaigning and plenty of fundraising and plenty of new polls around Iowa last week. But we're going to begin tonight with abortion because Governor Kim Reynolds' allies were in court last Friday asking a judge to reinstitute the state's fetal heartbeat law in light of recent U.S. and Iowa Supreme Court decisions overturning constitutional protections for abortion. What does it mean, Laura, and where do we go from here?
Well, I was at the Polk County Courthouse on Friday to listen and watch these oral arguments. It was very interesting. So on the one side, you have private attorneys representing the state because Attorney General Tom Miller said that he did not want to defend this law in court. And they are arguing that the 2018 law, which would ban most abortions after about 6 weeks, that was struck down improperly in 2019. It was struck down under Iowa Supreme Court and U.S. Supreme Court precedents that have since been overturned. And therefore, the Polk County District Court should go back and modify the injunction and, in fact, dissolve the injunction and allow that 2018 law to go into effect. This is very unusual. Nothing like this has ever happened in Iowa where a law that was struck down is brought back to life in this kind of a setting. So on the other side, lawyers for the ACLU of Iowa were defending Planned Parenthood in court and saying they made several arguments, but the main one was this case is closed. This is not a vehicle for relitigating what the standard should be for evaluating abortion rules. And if the Iowa legislature wants to pass a new abortion ban, they can do that and we can argue in court. But this case is closed and the Iowa rules of civil procedure don't allow you even to consider this kind of a thing. And furthermore, they argue that the Iowa Supreme Court ruling in June, which overturned the abortion rights precedent, still left in place what was called an undue burden standard, which balances the rights of a pregnant person with the state's interest in preventing abortions. And therefore, this law would fail even under that standard. But they argued that the judge shouldn't even get to considering the merits of the state's arguments because this is a closed case.
So to clarify, the fetal heartbeat law would abolish abortions, make it illegal after about 6 weeks after conception. Right now, it is a 20-week law in Iowa. Abortions are legal until about 20 weeks. So the governor has declined to talk about what she really wants to do with abortion legislatively. She's relying on the court here, but virtually everybody in the state knows she would like to ban it.
Yes, and people were asking me, when is the court going to rule? Well, it could be anywhere. It could be within the next 60 days. It could take up to 90 days. We don't know when the Polk County District Court will rule. Whichever side loses is sure to appeal to the Iowa Supreme Court, but that would take months. And meanwhile, the legislature is going to be coming back to work in January. So I do anticipate that the legislature will probably pass a new abortion law. But meanwhile, this case, I mean, it could go in the Polk County Court. The judge could just decide, I'm not looking at this. The case is closed. The judge could say, I'm willing to consider this, but actually this law still is unconstitutional under an undue burden standard. There are any number of ways that she could look at this. I do want to clarify that there are a few exceptions in this 2018 law, a few exceptions for rape and incest that if reported to law enforcement within a certain time frame, and there are a few exceptions for medical emergencies. But for the most part, the vast majority of abortions, Planned Parenthood presented evidence that said 98% of abortions in Iowa happen after 6 weeks. And so the vast majority of those would be illegal if this law came back into effect.
And of course, one of the interesting things we're going to be looking at next Tuesday night, election night, when you and I are on the air, and the national pundits will be looking at across the country, how much has abortion turned out Democrats in the election? How much will inflation, because that's the Republicans' closing argument, it's all about inflation, how much will that turn out? In other words, which side's going to have the bigger turnout? And who knows?
And I think the biggest question also is young voters. Traditionally, young voters don't turn out, generally speaking, at as high a rate as older voters, but particularly in a non-presidential year, youth voter turnout drops pretty significantly. And so there are some signs in some states. The Iowa Secretary of State's office does not release the data by age. So I don't know about the early voting numbers in Iowa by age, but there are some signs in some states that the youth turnout is higher than it was in 2018. And that could be partly because of the U.S. Supreme Court's ruling in Dobbs.
And Democrats are definitely hoping the youth turnout saves them in a number of states.
Definitely. They absolutely need that. They can't win without a strong youth turnout in quite a few states.
Well, this is the last week of full campaigning, and so we're going to see a lot of it going on in Iowa. And one big guy who's coming in on Thursday for the Republicans, former President Donald Trump, coming to Sioux City to campaign for Governor Reynolds and U.S. Senator Chuck Grassley.
Yes, this is really interesting. I'm going to get a little political science on you here. So there, when people look at election strategies, one strategy is persuasion, where the candidate tries to get a certain number of likely voters to come over and support me and not the other person. The other model is mobilization, where the focus is primarily on turning out your own base of supporters and not so much worried about persuasion. And when I heard that Donald Trump was coming to do this rally in Northwest Iowa for Chuck Grassley, that was my first thought. The Grassley campaign is going for full mobilization of the GOP base. That is the most Republican leaning area of the state. And that is a state where if they feel that the race against Mike Franken is close, they need a very high turnout. In 2018, the midterm election turnout was pretty high across the board. It was extremely high in Northwest Iowa, partly because Steve King was in the toughest race of his life against J.D. Scholten. And there's nothing comparable to that going on in Northwest Iowa. And I think that that may be why they booked this rally for Sioux City.
And of course, he is coming in just as after a new Des Moines Register poll on the president last week showed that most Iowans now hold unfavorable views of him. 52% of Iowans say their feelings toward the former president are very or mostly unfavorable. So that's an interesting balance right there. The president coming in, but he's widely disliked.
Well, and that poll was also showed that among independents in particular, 57% mostly or very unfavorable, and only 40% mostly or very favorable. But remember, that poll was of Iowa adults. That was not a likely voter poll. And so you don't know what the turnout is going to be. But among those very engaged voters, I think that's what Republicans are banking on. I do think that in areas like, let's say, the suburbs around Des Moines, where Trump is less popular, even among some of those moderate Republican voters, I think that this rally, depending on how that goes in Sioux City, it's something that could potentially help Cindy Axne, for instance, in her race against Zach Nunn, where the suburban vote is going to be very important.
We should point out that the recent poll showed that Governor Reynolds is ahead of Deidre DeGeer, her Democratic opponent, by 17 points. And it shows that Senator Grassley is ahead of Mike Franken by only 3 points. Now, last week, both Grassley and Franken released their own polls. And I guess what's interesting about this is that they both, the Grassley poll and the Franken poll, showed Senator Grassley in the lead.
Yes, that's right. I have not seen any poll anywhere showing Mike Franken in the lead. The Change Research is the firm that's been doing the polling for Franken's campaign, and they showed a 3-point margin, 48% to 45%. They did release a little bit more detail about their poll than the Grassley campaign. The National Republican Senatorial Committee, which is the main campaign arm of Senate Republicans, they mostly just released the top line numbers. I wasn't able to get a more detailed memo that showed Chuck Grassley ahead by 11 points. And interestingly, their poll showed Grassley winning independents by a pretty big margin, whereas the Seltzer's poll for the Des Moines Register showed Mike Franken ahead among independents. So, I mean, we're just going to have to see. Usually internal polls, people take those with a grain of salt. As we discussed last week, the national forecasters have changed their rating on this race from safe Republican to likely Republican. That just reflects the respect they have for Ann Seltzer, who is the Des Moines Register's pollster.
So does the former president's arrival in Iowa later this week show that perhaps the Grassley campaign is, if not panicking, at least highly concerned?
Well, you have to acknowledge that they're worried. I mean, he's never been in a race that's remotely competitive. He's never been reelected by less than a 20-point margin. And usually at this stage, he's running a lot of positive ads. He's been running a lot of negative ads on TV. And some outside groups have been coming in and spending some money on behalf of Grassley as well. And I think bringing Trump in, as I said, this clearly holding a rally in the northwest part of the state is designed to increase Republican turnout in that very heavily Republican area. But of course, the rally is going to get statewide news coverage. It's not as if only the Sioux City networks are going to cover it. Every local TV station and radio across the state is going to be have at least highlights from that rally. So you have to think that the Grassley campaign must be a little bit worried.
We'll talk about this on Monday night, what the president, former president, says. Meanwhile, current President Joe Biden held a virtual fundraiser for 3rd Congressional District Democratic incumbent Cindy Axne last Wednesday. He said a lot of complimentary things about her. Now, this was, again, a virtual fundraiser, not open to the press. What do we make of that?
Yeah, it was hard. I mean, they released a few quotes from it. Hard to know exactly what was happening. But Cindy Axne was a strong supporter of Joe Biden. She endorsed him a few days before the Iowa caucuses in 2020. She's been a strong supporter of his agenda. And, you know, the House Democrats have a very small majority by historical standards. And a lot of bills that were passed when Barack Obama was president, there might be 10 or 20 or 25 Democrats who voted no, because there were a lot of conservative Democrats. Cindy Axne is on the more moderate wing of the House Democratic Caucus. She's one of only 7 House Democrats who were elected in 2020 in districts that Donald Trump carried. And she's been there for Joe Biden. So I wasn't surprised that he did an event for her. Also, though, not surprised that they closed it to the press. I mean, I think they just don't want to chance anything unexpected news coming out of an event like that.
And of course, the Congresswoman felt compelled, for whatever reason last week, to release a new ad, this one about her trip to France, which has been criticized in Republican ranks. She voted in the House on a key bill while she was on vacation in France. And now in this ad that she put out last week, she defends herself, but she also accuses Zach Nunn, her opponent, of stalking, her word, her son's social media.
Yeah, so this remote vote, from France, where somebody voted by proxy on behalf of Cindy Axne in August, this has become a major issue. Zach Nunn brought it up in both of the debates repeatedly, and it's been in Republican-funded ads, not directly funded by Zach Nunn's campaign, but by other Republican groups have highlighted that, not just on TV, but a lot of digital advertising as well. So clearly, this was something Cindy Axne felt that she needed to respond to. And I guess sometimes they say the best defense is a good offense, and that's clearly what she was trying to do. I thought it was interesting. A couple of weeks ago, we talked about her ad with a baby monitor, where she brought up that Zach Nunn used a baby monitor to listen in on conversations of other members of student government when he was in college. And this seemed to be carrying on this idea that Zach Nunn, you know, she said, like you said, he stalked my son's social media, and this idea that he will do anything to get elected. So she framed the vote as she's a busy mom, hard to balance work and family. When this vote came up, when they already had a vacation plan, she voted remotely, as did more than 150 of her colleagues. So I have no idea whether it's going to work. She clearly felt a need to respond because so much money has been spent on the other side pushing this message out.
Yeah, let's talk about this district's fundraising. We'll come back to the state fundraising, which is right above it on our script here. But in the 3rd district, the Register reported that nearly $12 million, that's a lot of bucks, have been spent so far in this race between Axne and Zach Nunn. That is stunning in a congressional race in Iowa.
It's a lot. I actually think more was spent on the 2nd district race in 2020, the one that was decided by 6 votes. But this is up there with among the most expensive U.S. House races in Iowa history. And as often happens, the money spent by outside groups exceeds the amount that the candidates themselves are spending. But Cindy Axne is more in control of her own message because her fundraising all the way through has been stronger. So she has funded the majority of the ads herself, versus Zach Nunn, who has aired several of his own ads, but he also has been more dependent on the outside groups spending millions of dollars on his behalf, and he can't directly coordinate the message with them. I would say the messages are quite complementary, but he can't be, and his campaign staff can't be directly involved in forming those ads.
And we should point out, as we have throughout this campaign, that this 3rd district race is probably a toss-up. No one knows who's going to win this. because polling has been inexact. They can't really get good samples, but this one really is up for grabs.
And the forecasters, some say it's toss up, some say tilt Republican or lean Republican just because of the year, the way the year is shaping up. But absolutely no result would surprise me in this race. I mean, Cindy Axne being reelected by a few points or losing by a few points, I just think it's going to be very close.
And we'll be here next Tuesday night to talk about all of it. It is 15 after the hour, wherever in the world you are listening to us, and you are in tune with KHOI Radio's Capital Week, your one-stop source for everything political going on in Iowa. I'm Dennis Hart with Laura Bellin, and we are here every single week at this time to talk about politics, Iowa style, and we never run out of things to talk about, including money being the mother's milk of politics. Let's take this to the state level now, where the Des Moines Register reported today, Monday, as we go live on Monday night, that Republicans are in the final week of this year's campaign with a big fundraising and spending edge over Democrats in 9 of the 10 most expensive state legislative races this year. That is completely opposite what happened in 2020 when Democrats had the fundraising edge. How do we explain this?
Well, 2020, I would say, was the anomaly. I've been closely following Iowa legislative races since 2008, and I think that 2020 was about the only year where Democratic candidates were not being outspent in most of the battleground legislative races. Just usually Republican candidates and committees, they raise more from wealthy individuals and they raise more from PACs. So in 2020, there was a big push. The Democrats were only down by 53-47, and there was a real thought that they could possibly win control of the Iowa House. And so a lot of major donors on the Democratic side went big in supporting a lot of those Iowa House candidates. And then, of course, what happened was the opposite. The Republicans had a net gain of 6 seats. Then they picked up another seat in a special election later in 2021. And so now they have a 60-40 advantage. So with the perception being that the Iowa House and the Senate are not really up for grabs because the Republican majorities are so large, you have on the one side, the Democratic donors not being as interested in supporting those candidates, and also the political action committees and the Republican donors being even more motivated to support the Republicans, who they surmise will probably be in the majority again come January.
The Republicans have accumulated more than $4 million in those most expensive races. The Democrats, $2.5 million. Now, the year's most expensive race in the state Senate, Senate District 14, including Waukee, Adel, Van Meter, parts of Clive and West Des Moines. And this is an absolutely big, giant race between two giants.
Yes. And this may end up being the most expensive legislative race in Iowa history. I know there have been other races that cracked the $1 million mark, only a handful of them, though, in this one, where they're going to have more fundraising reported this coming week. Sarah Trone-Garriott is a first-term Democrat. Jake Chapman is a third-term Republican, and in fact, the second-ranking Senate Republican. So both sides are just pulling out all the stops. It's a suburban swing district. Jake Chapman has never run for office in a district like that before. It is most likely a pro-choice district given the suburban nature of it. And that's an issue that Sarah Trone-Garriott has emphasized. But it is just going to be a really big race. I just learned today that Governor Kim Reynolds has voiced a message, a recorded message that is being texted to some voters in Senate District 14. So this is a very high priority for the Republican establishment.
That race has seen more than $1.5 million so far in fundraising. It's one of those races next Tuesday night you and I are going to be focusing on. We can't go over every single race in the state, but we are focusing on those that look to be very competitive or are open, et cetera, et cetera. And one of them, again, that we're going to look at is a House race, District 28. That's the most expensive state race this year in Dallas County. And again, it pits two very well-known personalities against each other.
Yes, and Dallas County is the epicenter. It's very important, not only for these Iowa House and Senate races, but also for Cindy Axne's prospects in the 3rd District. So I noticed over the weekend, the Democratic Party had a joint canvas going on with people knocking doors for the legislative candidates and for Cindy Axne in these areas. Waukee, House District 28 is the Dallas County side of West Des Moines, plus Van Meter and Adel. And that's half of Sarah Trone-Garriott and Jake Chapman's Senate district where they're competing. And so it's a well-off district. It's not that expensive to campaign in the Des Moines market, but there have just been a lot of TV ads purchased, most of them on the Republican side.
Pitt's former GOP Congressman David Young, very well known, versus Democratic former WHO TV anchor Sonia Heitschusen. And that race has drawn more than $500,000 in fundraising. How do you see it? Or is there any way to see it?
I really just have no idea. On paper, that one is right down the middle. So that's one where turnout, how many moderates, how many independents, how many young people? There are a lot of young people in those newer subdivisions in Dallas County, and how many of those people turn out, it's going to be very important. So that could be a kind of a bellwether district, that one in Senate District 14, because depending on how that goes, if it's a good night for Democrats there, that would possibly bode well for Cindy Axne. But if it's a strong Republican result in those races, that could signal maybe a Republican landslide election.
Let's talk about another race that may be up for grabs. And this is the second congressional district. The Democratic Party challenger Liz Mathis campaigning against Republican incumbent Ashley Hinson. Now, that race has shifted again from political forecasters. It is just one move away now from being declared a toss-up.
Yeah, so originally, long ago, the forecasters rated that second district, this is most of the northeast part of the state, as likely Republican. They were looking at the fundamentals, the fact that those counties voted for Trump twice collectively. They were also looking at Ashley Hinson having the advantages of incumbency and just generally Republicans being on track to do well in a midterm election where Democrats are in control in Congress. But as the year has gone on, that race has been shifted and now, as you say, shifted again. So I think I have not seen the internal polling, but usually what happens when there's a rating change like that is it means that one or both sides' internal polling is showing that this is a very close race. And another clue that Republicans do not feel that they have that race put away is that the Republican outside groups, the campaign arm of the House Republicans and aligned super PACs, are spending a lot of money on behalf of Ashley Hinson, both positive messages about Hinson and negative messages about Mathis. The Democratic side has not really engaged. The Democratic committees are more focused on incumbent protection. So Mathis is really, she is spending a lot of money on TV herself, but she is getting outspent substantially if you can combine what Ashley Hinson's campaign is spending with the Republican outside groups.
Both of these candidates, of course, very well known because they were television reporters and anchors on the same TV station in Cedar Rapids, KCRG. But Hinson is the incumbent. Does it surprise you that she isn't a little bit farther ahead by at least any polling that we've seen?
Well, I don't know. She is a first-term incumbent. Usually the incumbents are most vulnerable in their first reelection bid. We just saw that in 2020 where Ashley Hinson herself defeated a first-term incumbent. Then in 2018, Abby Finkenauer had defeated a two-term incumbent, as did Cindy Axne. So Iowans do generally like to reelect their incumbents, but Ashley Hinson hasn't had as long to make herself known. And who knows, Liz Mathis does have a lot of name ID from the many years she worked in TV.
And very quickly, she released, Liz Mathis, her seventh television ad in the district last week. This one's called Me, and it's her talking about what she perceives to be the stakes for women if Hinson wins.
Well, it's actually mainly voiced by a woman who says that she had a very scary pregnancy. She had a cancer, cervical cancer, when she was in her 20s, and that made her high risk in her pregnancies. And she had a later pregnancy where there was a complication and she nearly died. And she talks about how a national abortion ban would make something that kind of situation unsafe. And she had a 9-year-old son and he was worried that his mom was going to die. So it's a very emotional ad. And it's told mostly from the perspective of another woman, where Liz Mathis just comes in at the very end to say that she approved the message. So they clearly, the abortion rights issue is one that is figuring very strongly in all of the races, not just in Iowa, all of the competitive U.S. House races, I would say almost across the country. You're seeing Democrats putting a lot of money into that message.
Again, Democrats pushing abortion, Republicans pushing inflation and the economy is their key issue. Okay, there was another Des Moines Register poll last week showing at least a little bit of surprise to me and perhaps to you as well. This one showed that Democratic State Attorney General Tom Miller leading his Republican challenger Brenna Byrd by 16 percentage points, 49% to 33%. That somewhat surprised me.
It was surprising, and I will say, as I talked to people last week, not too many people believe that that reflects the true state of affairs on the ground. My understanding, and I have not seen the numbers, is that the internal polling on both sides shows Miller a little bit ahead, but not a double-digit lead for Miller. So I'd say the race is still very competitive. Brenna Byrd is spending a lot more money than Tom Miller on television. But what that poll did show was that among independents, that was where Tom Miller had a very strong lead. And he was even pulling a little bit of the Republican vote. And if that's accurate, then that would be pretty devastating for Brenna Byrd. She is going to need to consolidate the Republican vote and probably do pretty well among independents, depending on what the turnout looks like. But again, that bringing Donald Trump to Northwest Iowa, that should help Brenna Byrd. By the way, she is a former chief of staff to Steve King for part of the time that he was in Congress.
Okay, let's zoom down to something that came out late this afternoon, this Monday afternoon. Democrats' reckoning in Iowa is going to be coming pretty quickly from the Democratic National Committee. It's expected to vote on the order of the presidential nominating calendar and the fate of Iowa's first in the nation caucuses in early December. So here we go, December 1st and 3rd. Iowa may lose its first in the nation status.
I think it's pretty likely Iowa will lose. Remember that this vote was supposed to happen in August, and they kicked the can down the road until after the election. And I suspect that the DNC didn't want to hurt the Iowa candidates who are in competitive races by pulling the plug on the Iowa caucuses right before the election. But I will be surprised if Iowa is still among those early states. I mean, we will see, but there is just a lot of opposition within the DNC to keeping Iowa first. It does seem like Nevada and New Hampshire and South Carolina are more secure in their positions. And Nevada, and to a lesser extent, New Hampshire, have highly competitive Senate races. And I think that helps. Now, Iowa's Senate race is recently considered slightly more competitive, but it hasn't been on the top tier of competitive races. And so as people in the DNC are looking to hold these early caucuses or primaries in states that are competitive in the general election, I think that's going to hurt Iowa.
Now, the timing on this announcement this afternoon was interesting. It came a week after another new Des Moines Register poll showed that a majority of Iowans say it would be best if the state continued holding the first presidential nominating contest. What made this interesting to me is that Republicans are more likely than Democrats to want to hold on to that first spot.
Well, and also I was surprised that actually 26% in that poll said it would be better for some other state to go first. I would have thought that an even bigger majority of Iowans would want to see the presidential candidates here. And it's ironic because the Republicans are very supportive of Iowa staying first. I don't think that's ever been questioned, even though, as you may remember, Donald Trump did not win the Iowa caucuses. Ted Cruz came from behind to win the Iowa caucuses. So it's kind of an interesting situation, but it has become a little bit more partisan. Republican leaders in Iowa have talked about how the Republican National Committee is very committed to keeping Iowa first and have used that as a talking point against the Democratic Party. But again, I was intrigued by the 26% saying that it should go somewhere else, because that to me seemed like a pretty large part of the sample.
Okay, we have a couple of minutes left. I know you have been following early voting going on in Iowa, as many people have in many states. And in some states, early voting is down. Some states, it's up. Where does Iowa stand?
Well, it is down compared to 2018. It's way down compared to 2020. Of course, 2020 was a presidential year, and then a year where the absentee voting was just through the roof because of the pandemic. Absentee ballot request forms were mailed to everybody and every registered voter, which isn't happening anymore. It's actually illegal under the new Iowa law. But I looked at the numbers as of last Thursday, which were the most recent numbers that we had over the weekend. And the numbers were pretty substantially down compared to the 2014 and the 2018 midterms. It's a little bit hard to compare because the early voting period is so much shorter. So in 2018, we had 29 days to vote early, and in 2014, we had 40 days. But as of today, the very latest numbers, there are almost 200,000 Iowans have turned their ballots back in. Democrats have a lead, which is typical for early voting. About 109,000 Democrats have already returned their ballots, about 62,000 Republicans. So that's a lead of about 47,000. And no party voters are much less likely to vote early. And we see that only about 27,000 ballots are back from no party voters. So 200,000 total votes in, not a huge number. I expect the overall turnout in the midterm to be between 1.1 and 1.3 million. So we're not talking about a high percentage of the overall vote. Democrats are going to need a very substantial lead in that early vote to have any hope of overcoming the Republican traditional advantage on Election Day voting.
Laura, we are out of time. I hope you have a great rest of a Halloween evening.
You too, Dennis.
And we'll be back here next Monday night. You have been listening to Capital Week on KHOI Community Radio. A reminder that the views and opinions expressed here did not necessarily reflect the opinions of KHOI or its staff. Now, Laura and I are going to be back in this same time slot next week on Election Eve. And we are going to preview the election, all of the key races. And we'll also be talking about everything else interesting, important, or entertaining about politics, Iowa style. We hope you can join us. It's an important show. Until then, thank you so much for the privilege of your time. We appreciate it. We value it. Between now and next time, we hope you have a safe, healthy, and happy week.